Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to a beautiful morning here and another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast. What?
Go ahead, let's go.
It's going. I'm trying to do the introduction here.
Oh, we live?
We're live right now, right? Yeah, to our dozens of listeners out there. Dozens, I say, dozens. Hi everybody. Thank you for listening. I was just getting scolded a couple minutes ago before I turned the mic on by my partner in crime on the show every week, Mr. John Cimino.
Hello, everybody.
John was yelling at me because I was distracted. I have a... What did you... In all seriousness, you firmly believe I have ADD?
A little ADD, a little narcissism, a little ego. See, but for some reason, I have the same thing, and nobody understands how we work, but for some reason, we do. I got a little of that, too. But, no, we were discussing about how you're yelling about your kid not doing anything, and you're saying, like, yeah, what are you doing? Nothing.
Well, the problem is, I got a lot on my mind. Like, last night, I was making the new postcards for this year's Terrific Con. I got artwork from Jerry Ordway, and I put together the cards because I'm obsessive. I do everything for the show. I won't let anybody else do anything with it. And I was up, and I was putting it together, and you know, I have to double check everything because at one point I spelled the word tickets wrong, and then I spelled the word Connecticut wrong. You know, because I'm exhausted when I'm doing this, and instead of waiting until the next day, I'm impulsive. I have no patience. So I have to do it. But you're yelling at me because I was supposed to read. Yesterday I got a bunch of old comic books. And I got Hulk 142, written by Mr. Roy Thomas. And it's about the Hulk fighting Valkyrie. The Valkyrie from the Thor books from Asgard. And she was also featured in the new Thor Ragnarok movie. And that's all I had to do was read a comic so you and I could talk about it today. But what do you think happened?
Well, let's first point out that issue 142, which Roy Thomas wrote, she was actually called that in the movie Ragnarok, correct?
She's called Scrapper 142, yeah.
Yeah, after that issue, which I thought was pretty cool. And might I add that Thor Ragnarok, I think it's coming onto DVD, Blu-ray, and all that on the 26th of February.
Yeah, it's coming up. Yeah, pretty soon you'll be able to own it at home.
You never buy them. You get it on...
No, I buy them.
Oh, do you? I thought you get it on the TV, because that comes out like...
No, because they'll give you the digital codes. Disney's good about that. If you have Disney stuff, you can put it in the code, and you can watch it on your phone. You can watch it on TV. Once you own a Disney DVD or Blu-ray, you can get to watch it anywhere. But sometimes I have no patience. And when Spider-Man Homecoming came out, I downloaded the digital thing because I wanted to watch it. And because it wasn't a solely owned Disney movie, you couldn't watch it on all the different stuff. So it sucked. I downloaded it for Amazon.com, and I could only watch it on there. I couldn't watch it on my phone, and then I had to get a different app. And
well, let me ask you this, Mitch. I'm not privy to ordering that stuff because I get the DVDs or the Blu-ray.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they give you all the bonus stuff, too?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but you're like kind of like me. You gotta have it.
Oh, like, I know. I'm looking right now in the next room, and I see my shelf of DVDs all lined up, and now they're all superhero stuff. I never thought that day would come where I'd look on a shelf and see movies based on all this junk I read. Look at that. Junk. I'm looking at this book as we speak. I'm trying to read. It opens up with the Hulk swimming up to Liberty Island, and there's the Statue of Liberty, and she's all dark, which, ironically, look at what's happening in the world right now. There's a government shutdown as we speak, and the state parks are closed. So, yes, the Hulk would not be allowed to go to the Statue of Liberty right now.
Exactly. But you want to know something funny about that issue? I'm going to tell you something. First, that's the chick era. It's a feminism type book.
Did you
it's
just say chick?
Chic. Isn't it called chic?
I guess chic, yes. I was going to say
That's what they called it in the 70s, because when I was talking to Roy about it. But I loved that issue. I got a little disappointed when she nerve pinches the Hulk and kind of gets him all disoriented. But what's cool about it, let me just mention, okay, it's all about, Roy kind of ruined my view of that book, because all through the years when I was a kid, I thought there was a joke in that book. But when I talked to Roy about it, he was like, no, I just wrote it. And it kind of like, I was like, oh my God, for so many years, maybe 20 years since I was a little kid, I thought that he put that joke in there, and it really, he just wrote it, and he didn't even have a joke. And it kind of, like I said, it kind of just disappointed me. But in that issue, I'm gonna throw some spoilers, Mitch, because you were supposed to read it last night, you didn't read it.
I'm trying to catch up right now, but go on.
Okay, but do this, you can kind of follow along here. During the issue, the whole thing is about, you know, women.
It's all about women's liberation. I'm reading it now, yeah.
Okay, yeah, okay, but women about having equal rights, and, you know, it's all that stuff that's going on, and
right.
In New York and stuff.
Around the world, yeah.
Okay, but when you watch that, okay, so the Enchantress bestows the gift, or like she gives the power to this one girl, I forget her name, she's petitioning, you know, the blonde girl that's in there, you know how she's petitioning?
Yes, I just saw her a second ago. Her name is Samantha.
Yeah, I can't remember her name. But
Samantha.
What's her name?
Samantha.
Samantha, yes, and then she empowers her to become the Valkyrie. Okay, so the Valkyrie starts going nuts to fight the Hulk. The Hulk doesn't want to fight her because she's a girl, and she takes crazy offense to that. And so the whole fight that's going on, like in the all the rich people are all running out and all that stuff, the Hulk just wants to leave, and she wants to fight the Hulk and prove that she's like, you know, I'm a woman, I can take you, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then you notice she tricks the Hulk, and the Hulk, when she kicks the Hulk out of the building, he says, well, good, I'm going to leap away. And then she goes, yeah, you're right, I was wrong. Come here, just give me a hug. And then she presses a pressure point on him, and he knocks him out.
Yeah.
And so what she wants to do, she drags him up to the Empire State Building.
Correct, I'm almost there.
Picks him up, throws him off, and then she's kind of thinking, like, oh, my God, I killed him. Like, oh, my God, what did I do? Because she's kind of coming out of that haze. So she goes down, and then she sees the Hulk getting out of all the rubble. And then she goes, oh, my God, you're alive. And he goes, and the Hulk, the whole time, he doesn't want to beat her up or doesn't want to fight her. He says, of course, nothing can harm Hulk, least of all the hand of a woman.
I just saw that panel as you said
it. Yep. I thought that was the big joke, because it looked like he didn't want to fight her because he wants to, because of, she's a girl, and she's saying, I'm just as tough as you. And then he turns out to be the male chauvinistic pig that he was because he didn't want to fight her. And then he says, you can't hurt me because you're a woman. So I thought that was a big joke. And I, all my life, I thought that was a joke. So when I asked Roy, I said, Roy, did you do that to be like a big joke, like a kick in the face for the feminism because the Hulk turns out to be a chauvinistic pig too? And he goes, no, I just kind of wrote that. I was like, oh, my God, you killed me. I was like, I thought that was a joke. And it wasn't a joke. So even to this day, I always mention it to Roy. You ruined 142 for me. And you know what he said to me? Well, that's comics, kid.
Well, I just kind of thumbed through the whole thing real quickly. So this girl, young lady, becomes the Valkyrie when she pronounces the word Valhalla. Because the Enchantress bestows on her, almost like Billy Batson in Shazam. She says it, and she transforms into a Norse god.
Yeah.
Is that now, I'm sorry, I don't know everything, but is that the Valkyrie that we're going to see years later in the Defenders?
Yeah, this is her. I think this is her second appearance. I think her first
appearance. So the girl, so the young lady who's in those, the Valkyrie of Marvel fame is this person right here, Samantha.
Right, because when you first see her, when Roy created her in issue 82 or 83 of the Avengers, yeah. With that the Liberty Legion, all those girls, you don't ever see her origin. She's just kind of there. And then when you see her here, it's almost like, but that girl Samantha never becomes the I don't think she ever becomes the Valkyrie again. I think it was just like she just appeared again.
So that's what I'm saying. So when you see Valkyrie in later issues, that's just a Norse Asgardian warrior.
Well, it is still that girl, and it's still the one that was in Avengers in there, but she doesn't have a secret identity. I think it's kind of never really explained.
Yeah.
It is her, but it kind of isn't. You know, it's kind of like I think when I asked Roy about it, he kind of just didn't really remember. It was kind of like, it was her, but it's not, kind of not.
Well, they look upon this as the origin of her. I picked up the book for basically a couple bucks, but it was a good read. John Severin did the art. John Severin, mostly known for Cracked Magazine and Sergeant Fury.
He did the inks.
Are you sure? Let me go back. Let me see.
I think it was Trimpy who drew it.
Oh, I'm sorry. It says artists Herb Trimp and John Severin. So,
yeah, Severin did like the inks and stuff.
And it was inspired by the book Radical Chic by Tom Wolfe, who wrote the acid Kool-Aid test, whatever that was. I can't remember.
Yeah,
that.
It was the whole Chic movement. It was that whole.
Yeah. And he also wrote The Right Stuff, which was the story of the space program.
Yeah. That's what they're protesting and they're doing all that stuff. And it's all about the feminism. And
it's so topical for the time we're living in right now. Once again, this book was written in, well, it's 15 cents on the cover.
So it's 73?
1971.
72. Oh, yeah, 71.
1971 it comes out, and here it is. That's what's on the news. Marches and women protesting for equal rights and Hollywood all abuzz for that. And the Hulk was leading the way back in the day, more than 40-something years ago here. 46, 47 years ago. Wow, look how topical. Roy Thomas, a man ahead of his time.
Well, yeah, he was. I gotta admit, comics at that time, too, in the mid, like the early 70s to like 75, what a great, great period of comics. I mean, it just, and unfortunately, comics were not selling that well then, I mean, as they were in the 60s, but just that energy that came out of the 60s was so prevalent in that mid-70s, too. Yes, it went all the way after 75, all the way to, like, you know, was great, too. I think up to 82, for me, comics were the greatest.
Well, I think it's because, like, if nobody's watching you and you're young, most of these guys are all in their 20s, they're probably like, screw it, I can do what I want. You know, this is, and you have that rebellious hippie type of attitude going on around the world, and these guys were of that generation. Your Engelharts, your Starlins, your Thomases,
Len Reed was there, like Marv Wolfman, all those.
All those guys, yeah.
Must have been such a fun time to be there, though, huh?
You mean all the drugs they were on?
Well, that was the time.
Except Roy, really, of course, because we've had this conversation with Mr. Thomas. We were like, how far out was some of the concepts he was thinking of? And Roy was not a big drug guy. No, not really.
No, you thought that he was. Roy was a wild man, though. Let's get this
straight. No, Roy was no choir boy. He wasn't going over there on Sunday
school. No, he was no. And the cops visited his the Sanctum Sanctorum, his hotel, his apartment many times.
Yeah, baby.
He had some wild rampant times, but it was that time. That 70s kind of came out of the 60s and those people.
That's one of the fun things about having them at the show now, because they are in their 70s and late 60s and stuff, and they've kind of, some of them have calmed down, not all, because we partied with Roy at Terrificon.
Yeah, well, Jacob was another one. He even said it at the Terrificon Star Wars panel. And, you know, Roy was kind of playing down the wildness. And I remember Jacob saying to him, He goes, "Well, we had some good times though, Roy." You know, he goes, you're selling yourself up short because it was such a great time. I remember Chaykin saying this. It was such a great time during that period to be artists and working in like an artistic
field. Well, you know what it is too? It was the community. They were all close together. They were all in the New York area. You know, nowadays, sadly, the comic world, because of the technology, it's spread out throughout the world. You have brilliant artists, but they're not all within blocks of each other. They're in other countries.
Roy told me right across the street from, like, the Marvel offices was the National Lampoon place. That's where all they did, like, it was, like, across the street.
Yeah.
Like, just
well, no, and Barry went in the studios. Chaykin shared a studio with, like, Barry Windsor Smith, Howard Chaykin, Starlin was there. Who else was some of the greats, you know, P. Craig Russell. Then there's Mike Kaluta. I always say his name wrong. All these guys.
You know?
Yeah, that's such a creative environment. So, like, you know, I mean,
it's kind of like when you look at Hollywood at the same time. You had your Francis Ford Coppolas, your George Lucases, your Steven Spielbergs. They were all within the same age era. You know, they all were relatively within a couple years of each other, and they all lived in that atmosphere out in California. The same thing was going on. It was a cultural talent revolution. You know?
Yeah, it was. We came out of the 60s. It was after Vietnam. It was that, so there was this creative, usually after, like, horrible situations, there's always this influx of creativity. Like, you know, usually hardships in life, that's what spurs creativity. People begin to dream. I mean, obviously you have the Stan Lee thing and that boomed out. But then after the Vietnam stuff and that ended, you had this creative influx of, like, just these people that wanted to be in comics, they wanted to make movies, and you can see it. That was a great period of comic book. And it still lives up to the test of time. You can't do that with any of the 90s comics or any of the 80s comics. You read those things today and you're like, oh my god.
Well, we're living in an era right now where a lot of the world thinks it's a bad time, so they're going to sit there, and maybe this is a genesis of a whole new creative generation happening right underneath our noses, and we don't even see it.
You think so? I mean, let me be honest here. Me and you, we do have our pulse on what's hip and stuff in the comic world. But I'm going to tell you this, exactly what I said in the, because I was of age in the 90s. You know, I came out of the 80s, and I was of age in the 90s, and even reading, and I was a reader till 2003, I was saying that this sucks, and this is not going to last. Those 90s comics is not going to last, and they didn't. Like, what, there's a few, I mean, I'm not going to knock that, but what unbelievable stories that came out of the 90s that, like, okay, you had Kingdom Come, you had maybe Marvel, but what else really came that really changed the whole market? What other than art and, you know, big art, like the Image stuff, none of those stories were that good.
No, there was the pockets of stuff I enjoyed. Pockets.
I'm not going to say, because it's in a creative field and you have all these geniuses, I'm not going to take that away.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, everything rests, think about this, everything rests on Marvel from 61 to like 75 or like a little before, a little there. Everything that you see today is all from there. It's everything. It all derives from those. Look at the movies. Everything is from the 60s until that mid-70s point. Tell me, where am I wrong?
No. Maybe it's because all those heroes were newer than the ones that were over at the DC world, which was, you know, Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, that were around since the 40s.
Everything that, look at Guardians of the Galaxy, everything. Like, you got the Valkyrie, like, all those things come from, like, from 75 back to 61.
I don't know. It's too early in the morning. My brain is mush. I can't think of anything relatively to combat you and debate you and rebuttal. I'll disagree with you because it's a lot easier. What else we got here?
Go back.
What?
Case in point. What? Go read some of those 60s X-Men stuff or even some of those 70s ones, you know, with the Chris Claremont ones or those. Okay, read those. And then why don't you jump up to the 90s and read all that horrible Scott Liddell executioners. So see if you can stomach reading those 12 issues of anything Scott Rodell did, anything Howard Mackey did.
Stop picking on people, okay?
Yeah, but it's just bad, bad stuff.
Okay, well, there's a hope every time. Maybe these books that you're going off of, somebody enjoyed.
I'm not saying it didn't sell. Those things sold like crazy. But a lot of people were buying that stuff at that time. It was an influx of sales, and people thought they were going to make... Read the Death of Superman. You cannot tell me that's good stuff.
That's a good book. Cut it out.
You just cut me off, and it's one of the hardest things ever.
I did not.
You're such a liar. Hey, we pride ourselves on being real here, Mitchie.
Pride ourselves being what now?
Being real.
The power cosmic compels us to tell the truth and justice of the American way.
Okay, let's get off the subject because we're going to make a lot of enemies.
You are. All this stuff, you know that little disclaimer they put at the end of the show is all the things that you heard in this do not reflect the ideas and thoughts of Big Fedora Marketing. It's all John Cimino. You want to go talk to him? Write him at stretchhulk.hotmail.com?
Something like that.
Because you are, many people don't realize this, that you are a bit of a minor celebrity in your own right, because as lead singer of the metal band Grimlock in their 90s, you have a cult following out there. You've showed me the merchandise page. I've seen pictures. Is there videos out there?
But wait, Mitch, this shows you how unhip you are. I wasn't a metal band. We were a hardcore band. It's a lot different.
And what was the give me the differentiation there.
See, right now I'm talking to a 1940s guy right now, a guy that came up from the 40s. You know, he just listens to jazz, and when he heard that all the rock.
Who, me?
Yes,
I was frozen in a block of ice with Steve Rogers. Educate me. What was Grimlock?
Hardcore music was basically a derivative from the punk scene that started in the mid '80s. In the early '80s, you had the Sex Pistols and all that stuff. But it was all underground. But what happened with my generation, and we got the people like Biohazard, Earth Crisis, Hatebreed. These are all the bands I came up. Maybe bands you don't know, but are big now. Slipknot. What we were was that punk scene that, you know, the Ramones basically started a lot of that too. You know, the kind of the fast like, but what we started doing is we started getting metal injected on that. So the beats were becoming heavier. They were still catchy. They were still fast, but it was more aggression.
Wasn't it called speed metal?
Well, no. Speed metal is a little different. But hardcore was the components of punk, metal, and metal fused together. It was the last underground sound ever, because we were the last music ever to hit the radio. We were the last underground movement, because today there's no underground movement. There isn't anything. Hardcore was the last, and you didn't even think it was going to happen. And then when System of the Down, I can remember, because when we were touring, the heavy music was starting. People were starting to scream. You got to remember, when the Ramones and the Sex Pistols, they weren't really singing. They were kind of just kind of like, they were kind of yelling, but it got more aggressive. And that's why when you hear our music and everybody screaming, it was just a more aggressive, heavier sound. It was punk, but with like heaviness into it.
It seemed like primal scream therapy with the music.
Right, and then there was death metal. I mean, there's a lot of genres. There's death metal, there's like that. There's so much stuff. And Pantera was another band that was kind of making it prevalent. See, where Metallica was more metal, then you had Pantera that kind of had it, and then these other bands that were starting to come, and it changed the whole music scene. But hardcore was the last underground sound. There is no more underground. And that kind of went to like Prodigy and kind of went to the techno stuff. And then now what you hear, the raves today, you know, all the kids listening to those beats.
Yeah, the house music.
It's gone. It's over. Those DJs, it's gone. But yeah, we came in the mid-90s. There was a huge influx of that heavy metal scene. The heavy hardcore scene that I came, and I happened to be part of that wave of, where we started was in Northampton, Massachusetts, and why I got lucky, because there was a club called Pearl Street there. And I lived right down the street from Pearl Street. And what happened there is that was a club that all the bands from New York, we're talking Madball, we're talking Agnostic Front, all these 25 clubs, all these bands would come from all over that the eastern Massachusetts. They would come to that club. Henry Rollins went there, Korn went there, Biohazard went there. It was, and we were just being groomed and out of that sound. And where I happened to be in Northampton and all that stuff, there was a lot of musicians. I'll tell you some other big, ginormous bands that came out of that. Killswitch Engage. There, I was with those guys. Killswitch Engage. Shadows Fall, another one. Overcast. These are big. Sam Black Church. Those guys are from Boston. But they all came to this club because this happened to be a breeding ground of this type of music. So all our friends were starting this type of music, and then we started that, and we happened to get popular. You know, the difference was with my our stuff. We sounded like a lot of the other bands, but I knew, for me, I had a physical presence that the thing that I did different is I knew everybody was kind of a skinny type guy. There's a lot of veganism going on there. There was a lot of like straight edge stuff going on there. Though I never did drugs, I never drank. I kind of lived a straight edge lifestyle. I never promoted it, but I kind of went a different way. What I started doing was I lifted weights and I looked really good. So that kind of separated us from the pack because nobody kind of looked like us. And so Grimlock, with that sound, and we were catchy and I had a great physical presence, we actually did really well. Now, let's fast forward. I mean, we could have kept going, but my love and my passion has always been comic books. So what kind of hurt Grimlock is we were starting to really do it. I did it for 10 years. And then when we really started making it, I kind of was already burnt out by it because it was never my love. So I'd always like stop touring and all that, and I would come and I would hook up with Keith and we'd go to a comic convention, and I used to always think, this is what I wanted to do. Sure, I loved playing, I loved the girls, I loved the attention, but I didn't like everything else. It wasn't really my heart and soul. So after when Grimlock separated, we were supposed to have our national tour, it was supposed to be a big deal, I kind of left, and then I had my daughter, and I wanted to be with her, and that whole thing. So, fast forward now, that was in 2003 was the last we ever did. Now we're almost 15 years later. Grimlock has come back into flux because we were one of those prominent bands at that time. Now, we didn't make a lot of money and all that, but in the underground, we had a reputation, more on the West Coast than we had in the East Coast. But anyways, now a record company bought out all our stuff from our old record company, and now they've been reproducing our music, and now it's become a big deal. We got all this merchandise, and we have all this, all the LPs are coming out. But I'll tell you this, Mitch, you may think it's kind of funny, but we have a fan that travels. I can't remember his name. His name is Taylor, and I hate to say this, but he is in one of the biggest heavy bands today, going right now, and I'm not privy to that music. But he keeps in touch with me, and I see he just came off a huge tour. He has Grimlock tattooed across his knuckles because he was one of our biggest fans.
And is he the Scott Martin of Grimlock?
Yeah, but he's very successful now. But it shows me that, wow, we actually really influenced people, and all these people want us. And I tell you this, I've already had offers to sing on albums, money that I never thought possible, to tour again. People asking, and my band came out of the woodwork to kind of, get me back into tour, to do a national tour again. Now, would there be money? Yes. Would it be a crazy life? Yes. But I'm going to tell you why I turned it down. The music has never been my thing. I love it. I love the playing. I love the travel. But now I'm in the business of what I love to do. So unfortunately, to my other band members who love the music, who are musicians, who want to do this, I just never wanted to do it. So I've always turned it down. And I just got another offer literally 3 days ago saying, I wish you would come back out, because even big promoters have come out and wanted, they would say, can you just do one song? Can you just do, I mean, one show? And I never did it because I know what goes into it. And plus, I'm a perfectionist in my own right. I would never do a show that it was half-assed. And it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, you got to do something, you got to do it full-assed.
Right. So people are, I'm too big for doing marketing. For some reason, I joined that, and then, I'm, let me just tell you the little connection with Liz.
What? Go ahead.
No, well, what was that, your dog?
No, that was me sighing here. Go ahead.
No, but let's tell the one thing. If anybody knows Roy, really knows Roy, in the 50s, when Roy was a huge Elvis fan and stuff, but he's a huge music guy, and he started a band before he went into comic books. I started a band before I went into comic books, but what we have parallel is he always wanted to be a musician, and he even told me this. Now, this is Roy Thomas, who became a fanboy and became one of the greatest writers ever. I said, Roy, I became successful in a band, but I couldn't become successful in comic books. So I asked him, if you would want to switch lives, he told me, I said, yeah, I swear to God, he said to me, if I could switch, I would have done what you've done instead of what I've done. And I was like, really, you became one of the greatest writers ever. But he loved music so much that he would have rather lived my life than the life that he lived. But that's what makes me and Roy respect one another, is that, and I'm like, Jesus,
hey, I love to do this all day, but we got other things to talk about here.
Well, I'm just saying, but that's a big deal. But I mean, like, yeah, but Roy was always wanting to be a musician. But yeah, Grimrock was, it's more popular than it was when we were doing it. So that's funny.
Okay. There you go, folks. If you were,
Edgar Allan Poe, you know, he became popular.
All right. Dead. The Oscar nominations came out this morning while you were talking here. Let me see. Was there any superhero comic booky things going on? Let's see. Best Actor. Do you think anybody from a comic book movie?
Didn't Wonder Woman get nominated for something?
I'm looking right now on the list. Nobody in the Best Actor comp. But the thing is, when I look at the Best Actor combinations, I don't see any, you know, comic book. I see Gary Oldman, but I'm thinking Commissioner Gordon. The Shape of Water, that new take on the Creature of the Black Lagoon movie, has made a lot of nominations, leading the way with 13 nominations.
What's the movie?
The Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro. Let's see.
Is it the monster movie?
Yeah, the monster movie.
I'm sure. What's it called again?
The Shape of Water.
Oh, okay. I might have to.
All right. Let me look. Best Supporting Actor. Well, okay. I look at this as Willem Dafoe. He's up there. I'm thinking the Green Goblin. Woody Harrelson. He's up there. I'm thinking he's the guy in the new Han Solo movie. Richard Jenkins, 6 foot deep. Christopher Plummer. I'm thinking Star Trek III. And Sam Rockwell. I'm thinking, of course, of Hammer from the Iron Man movies. Those poor guys, they're up for an Academy Award. And in my sick, demented comic book filled brain, I only look at them as the characters they played in superhero movies. But to answer your question again, let me see. Wonder Woman did not get anything here. Hugh Jackman's Logan movie got nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. That's kind of nice. There's something out there. So Logan got one. That's a comic book thing. Blade Runner
I've never even seen any of those movies.
Let me see. Wonder Woman, Best Supporting, Best Music. Nope. Oh, wait. Sound Editing. No. Star Wars. Those are those awards that no one really cares about. Let's be honest. To go, oh, look, they won an Academy Award. For what? Sound editing, sound mixing.
I thought, Mitch, let me throw this at you. When I thought this year was a great movie, I thought the best, most entertaining movie I watched this year, obviously, did Wonder Woman come out in 2017?
Yes, it came out last year. Yeah.
Was that 2017?
Yes, Wonder Woman was totally snubbed. I just went down the whole list. It did not get anything. Star Wars got...
what about Jumanji? Did that get anything?
No. Guardians of the Galaxy, for visual effects, it's Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Kong Skull Island, Star Wars, The Last Jedi, War of the Planets, Blade Runner. That's it. So, yeah.
Did Blade Runner do well? Did that
No,
well?
That bombed horribly. Bombed.
Yeah, you know what? I think it was that lead actor. What the hell is that guy's name?
Oh, the Canadian kid. I can't even think of his name.
The Notebook. He did The Notebook. That one was claimed to fame.
What's his name?
Yeah, he did The Notebook. That
is that what he's famous for?
Yeah.
I always get him mixed up sometimes with Ryan Reynolds. I always go, oh, isn't that Ryan Reynolds? Now you got me going. I got to look it up. See, that's how old I am. When I was a young kid, I used to remember all the movie stars. Ryan something, right?
Ryan Gosling.
That's why I always think of... Yes, sorry, Ryan Gosling. That's why I always think Ryan Reynolds. I think he's Canadian as well, so...
See, I stay out of the... I don't watch movies other than, like, the superheroes, but there's a couple of things I like to watch. But I'm going to tell you this, Mitch. This is what I'm interested in watching. I know Black Panther. I know Avengers 4. I hate to say it, as big of a comic fan as I am, yeah, I watch all those movies, I'll support them, but I am getting a little tired, I hate to say it.
You know what movie
I'm actually thinking that's going to might be kind of fun? How about that Rampage movie with The Rock?
Yeah, based on that video game.
That looks fun.
It does look fun.
That's why I'm saying a sleeper movie for me was Jumanji.
Jumanji was one of the better movies. Mindless entertainment. So let me throw this out here as we wrap this up. Let's stick behind the scenes, the arguments. Let's stick to 30 minutes, and then here we are overboard today. Grimlock.
I hated Ragnarok. I'm throwing it out there. I didn't care about
Blue Stop. Ragnarok. First, it was the greatest movie ever. Maybe it should have been called Ragnar Grimlock, and you would have liked it better.
No. The Punisher was the best thing ever.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead.
Well, let's stand the test of time. I forgot what I was going to... Oh, yeah. When we were talking music, in the last couple weeks, I have been presented with some guests... possibilities for Terrific Con, because I know people listening to this go to the show, and we went back and forth about a certain guest from a heavy metal band. I assume they're a heavy metal band, correct? Yeah.
Heavy metal. Yes, correct.
And we went back and forth whether it fit in our wheelhouse, as they say, whether that was really our target audience, or did we want to sell out? You know, yes, we can get, you know, people look at me like, you're crazy. You could get all these tons of fans and stuff. And they're like, well, is there a big crossover? Because God knows they have diehard fans that would show up. You know, they crawl through glass to see them. But is it going to really reach out to, you know, the other comic book fans? We don't know. So I think I'm taking a pass on a certain heavy metal band who's iconic.
And being a partner in crime with you, I agree with that.
Yes, what is their guy? It's a mummy, isn't it? Isn't that their symbol?
Yeah. Do you want to say? Do you want to?
We can throw it out there. Let's just leave it there. Their character that appears on the record album covers is kind of like
the character?
A mummy. Huh?
You want me to say the name of their character?
I don't care. I'm passing on the guy.
Eddie is the name of the
character. Eddie's the character, yeah. So let's see if anybody could figure that out, whether, you know, they think we should have got him. I don't care. It is, go do your own show. That's the thing. You want him? Go do your own show. But no, this week's announcement for comic book creator-wise, this year I'm going to do it writers first, and then I'm going to move into some of the artists, and then we're going to move into the actors as we lead up to the seven-month trek. Is it seven-month? Eight-month trek to August for this year's Terrific Con at Mohegan Sun at the Exposition Center in Uncasville, Connecticut. Tickets on sale now. This week, it's Mr. David Michelinie. Now, I don't know how to pronounce his name correctly. I always said Michelinie. I've heard people say Michelinie, like the tire, but... He is the man who wrote some iconic Iron Man stories like The Demon in the Bottle, along with artist Bob Layton. He created Scott Lang, the new Ant-Man that appeared in Marvel Premiere and then went on to his own series. He's done so much work, even Indiana Jones comics, which I'm a fan of, Avengers comics.
He did a lot of Batman stuff.
So David Michelinie will be coming into Connecticut. I'm always happy when I bring people to Connecticut because 99% of the guests that we get at the shows over the years have never been here. Connecticut was not known as the hotbed of Comic-Con action, really. It was always this the place in between Boston and New York, you know? So it's nice that we bring these legendary creators and new talent to the show. So what's your favorite David Michelinie comic?
Didn't he do the Batman Year One?
No, that's isn't that Mazzucchelli, the artist?
Batman Year One?
No. Batman Year One was written by Frank Miller, and the artist was David Mazzucchelli.
Oh, see, you want to know something? I sometimes mess up their names.
Oh, yeah, no, you're off. One's a writer, one's an artist, yeah. Let me see if he's done some Hulks. I know you'll know that.
No, I don't know, but I thought he did that Iron, he reinvented Iron Man with...
He created the character of Rhodey, who becomes the War Machine. He did Incredible Hulk 232. That's the only one that would, Mr. Hulk Obsession.
Yeah.
232. But no, he's done a whole pile of stuff. It's a litany. I'm looking at it all. Justin Hammer. I just mentioned him being played by Sam Rockwell. He created that. He did that great story where Iron Man goes back and with Dr. Doom when they meet King Arthur.
Yeah, him and Dr. Doom, the time.
He introduced Bethany Cable, Jim Rhodes. These were some of Iron Man's gallery of sidekicks along the way there.
And Armor Wars too, right? The whole Armor Wars saga?
Yeah, Armor Wars is his. Yep, I'm looking at that too. With the Avengers, he worked on it from 1978 to 82 along with John Byrne and George Perez. He created Scotland. He created the Taskmaster with George Perez. An amazing Spider-Man. He created Venom along with Todd McFarlane, Eric Larson, and Mark Bagley. Introduced Venom.
He's kind of a low-key guy. He's kind of the one people know his stories, but they don't know him.
Well, they'll get an opportunity to meet him this August 17th to the 19th.
Absolutely. Did you see that segue? You caught on to that.
I picked that up. I didn't know what else to do with it. He also, if you're a fan of DC Comics, we'll jump over to DC because you and I are mostly Marvel guys. He's worked on everything from Action Comics to Jonah Hex to Starfire to Star Spangled War Stories. My God, Superman, Swamp Thing. I love when I go down these bibliographies of these guys, and it just goes on and on and on. There's so much.
Richard Turner with the Rock, one of his probably his most famous creation is that Marvel character. Go ahead.
I said Venom.
Venom, yeah.
Yeah, I said that. Yeah. Maybe you should listen to the show more often.
You didn't say it though.
I did say it. What's the matter? Is it like when I have the phone too close to my cheek? You couldn't hear it. We're getting cranky today on the show. But anyway, so yeah, David Michelinie will be here. And look at that.
In closing, let's just say, people, we've got a lot of guests coming. It's going to be a great time. And, we're working on a lot of stuff. Things are happening. Just be patient.
Yeah. Oh, a real quick footnote here. He and the late artist, Mr. Paul Ryan, he was a great guy, were the only two comic book creators who contributed both to the wedding issues of Spider-Man when he married Mary Jane Watson, and he contributed to the Superman marrying Lois Lane in the wedding album. So look at that. That's kind of cool, huh?
Yeah. He's had his hand in a lot of stuff. He's a great writer.
Oh, yeah.
He's like a Roger Stern. Like, they're just great comic writers,
Yeah, he started his career in 1975 with artist Ernie Chan working on Claw the Unconquered. And then he went on and on and on. Madame Xanadu. Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff. But these are the guys I like putting up on panels because they could talk forever about all the different books they did. And I'll give you a lot of the history and the backstory on some of the more famous stories like The Demon in the Bottle and Venom and how that all came about. But you'll be able to see that in person. Get your tickets now because we want to wrap this up, don't we, John?
Yes, we do. So what do we say, Mitchie?
We say, and that's that.
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.